Hello and welcome to Music Works, a podcast by Polyphony Arts. We're talking about the future of the classical music industry with some great guests. Thank you for joining us. Hi.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Steve. this is Music Works, a podcast by Polyphony Arts. I'm Katie Beardsworth, the founder of Polyphony Arts, and my guest today is Steve Sterling. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Katie. Nice to see you. Hi.
Thank you so much for joining me.
It's a pleasure.
Steve plays the French horn, as it says in his name here, and he is the principal horn for St. Martin in the Fields, horn in the New London Chamber Ensemble Wind Quintet, and teaches at Trinity Laban, amongst many other things. I've just realised that you said you were going to introduce yourself, but I've just done it for you.
I think it's all my life has been spent in and out of the chamber and chamber orchestra world. I've very much specialised in those areas, so I do dip sometimes into symphonic work, but by and large I'm a chamber orchestra player and a chamber ensemble player, and occasional soloist as well. So I've had a portfolio career, I think is how it's described, but it's very rarely been boring.
I'm sure. And so they're the main three strands of the portfolio career then is St. Martin's, the Wind Quintet, the New London Chamber Ensemble, and teaching, would you say?
The various other chamber groups I play for as well, teaching is a very important strand of that, of course, yes. Both with Trinity Laban in London and also privately.
And what has teaching been like over the last few months without being able to meet face-to-face?
Over the last few weeks, it's been quiet because conservatoire students have been on holiday. But up in the first month or two of the lockdown, all my teaching transferred to online, and that was very interesting. It was a huge learning curve for everybody. You have various levels of sophistication. At the most basic level, you can both be at each end of a telephone and kind of get something done using either FaceTime or Zoom or any of the various apps of those sorts. And those are subject to the algorithms that Zoom or whoever use to decide that an instrument might or might not be an acceptable form of the human voice. So, and the strength also of your Wi-Fi or internet connection is terribly important. So at the very, very basic level, you can get something done, and it's perfectly possible to deliver a good lesson if your signal is reasonable. There comes a point where if the signal deteriorates too much, then it's not a pleasant experience for anyone. But then you can gradually start upping your game. So you can switch from a mobile device to a laptop or a good tablet. Then you can use their internal microphones and cameras, or you can start adding your own microphones and cameras. So I've been gradually assembling bits of kit. So basically, online teaching is perfectly possible with almost any form of equipment, and you can gradually improve that. It's a big learning curve. You can improve the quality at which you can listen as well. As I mentioned, that the algorithms of Zoom and the various other things are designed to make human speech nicely comprehensible, but they're definitely not designed for the extremes of a piccolo or the lowest notes of a tuba. They'll cancel those notes out in the belief that human voices can't do that. So for online teaching, you...
I actually watched a singer. I've been listening mainly to a Zoom karaoke session.
Oh, yes.
Which is really, it sounds a bit daft, but it's really great. It's basically because, you know, obviously it's for singers who they have no other, you know, outlet for repertoire that they're working on at the moment. So it's kind of a safe space to sing to each other and to know that, you know, no one else is listening essentially.
Yes.
To sort of accept the limitations of Zoom.
Yeah.
And I listened to somebody sing Gilda's aria from Rigoletto and the coloratura bit at the end. Just literally, it just didn't, like, it was just silence. Zoom was like, no.
Yeah.
That's clearly not something we can transmit. It was so funny. I was sort of watching it going, oh, here it comes. And then, quite disappointing. I'm sure it was great if you were in the room. But that's really interesting. And it's great to hear that because obviously being able to teach and being able to learn online is such a valuable resource as we've had to go through a lockdown, would you say, to have that developed in the classical music world? Was there much online teaching going on
It's
for
been
that?
around for a long time. You know, some people have been teaching on Skype for a very, very long time, maybe a decade or so since I first heard of that concept. And I think whilst internet usage wasn't terribly high, that was quite feasible. But as the amount of internet usage has gone up and the demands on the networks have increased so much, it's become harder. So we're looking for platforms now that work and that produce a higher quality sound. Where we are right now in virtual concert halls is working on that sort of concept. We've all been using things like Source Connect, and then there are other things such as Jamulus and Jamkazam. These are online platforms wherein they're working towards being able to actually have a latency-free ability for people to busk and play together. That's very unusual to find anything which is latency-free.
Fascinating.
But in order to get latency free, you have to have absolutely fantastic computing power and fantastic upload and download speeds at both ends. Then you can achieve something but you need the right equipment.
Yeah, but also, I mean, when you say latency free, obviously, in-person performances aren't completely latency free either. So it's just kind of like this
No,
kind of
distance is
firm,
involved,
yeah.
as we're finding with distance performances. As a result of the restriction of lockdown regulations. Now, orchestras are starting up and with a 2 meter distance between each player. So now you turn on BBC Four and see a prom, and you'll see the players very, very, very distanced from each other. And it sounds remarkably considering, but you have to bear in mind the sound travels at 1100 feet per second at sea level, something like that. And if you've got two members of an orchestra that are 100 feet apart or 110 feet apart, that's a tenth of a second,
Yeah,
if my maths is right.
absolutely. I'm
And
not
so
sure
you
if the
have to.
math is right, but the logic sounds
Anyhow, but if the
yeah.
distance is great enough, that then the dis what two people can look at each other, play at the same time, and they definitely won't sound together.
So the whole thing is a bit of an exercise in learning a lot about latency and about
In
you
all
know how to
respects, yeah.
operate with it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
And do you think that as a teacher, you've had to, you know, learn all sorts of new things then as well yourself, so that you can support your students in terms of about different platforms, different technology and that sort of thing, or have the
Yes,
students
what I've
been?
learnt is that you can improve your technology as much as you like, but if the internet connection itself isn't strong enough, then it makes no difference. And if you've got the most basic technology, you know, just a phone with FaceTime on it, it'll work absolutely fine if you've got a rock solid signal. And if you're in Zoom, you disable the I forgot what we call it, you disable some sort of sound thing, but you revert to original sound, and then it's still not ideal, but it's better. But if your internet connection is strong, that's most of the battle. After that, you can just work on having the right sort of microphone. Cameras seem to be pretty damn good on anything these days. But yeah, so what's important is not to scare people off by saying you need this and that and this and that and this and that. You can do something useful with the most basic of technology, and then you can tweak it as you go along.
I agree with that completely. I think I put off buying a microphone to do these podcasts with for weeks because I was like, oh God, there's just so many choices, and maybe I'll buy one, and then someone will say I should have got something else, or, and in the end I was just like, I just need to go, I just need to buy one.
I went with a recommendation. I just thought I just
Yeah,
can't face doing the homework. I did a bit
absolutely.
of homework, of course, but then the recommendation seemed pretty good, so.
Recommendations are so important, aren't they?
Yeah.
And so what's the immediate future looking like teaching wise for you then? Is it more teaching online, some in person?
It'll certainly be. I'm aiming to do much more online, so this is an official. If anyone out there fancies a lesson with me, they're very welcome to get in touch. And I can do normal standard lessons. I can do consultation lessons if you're an amateur and you've got something you'd like to address or ask questions about, then I'm very happy. Happy to do half-hour consultations if it's just on one specific issue. And I've got a lot of experience over the last 40
Absolutely.
years.
Yeah,
I've done the rounds, so it's quite a lot of experience to relay if that's of help to people. So that's my official plug for myself. I'm very happy to coach,
awesome.
whether amateur, professional, student, at any stage.
Lovely. Great. So the other thing that you're working on at the moment, I think, is getting back into the chamber orchestra setting. Is that right?
Yes. Well, it started to happen. We had our first concert with members of the Academy of St Martin in the Fields a few days ago in a beautiful church, St Stephen's in Dulwich. And we performed the Mozart Horn Quintet and the Britten Simple Symphony for strings, and with very reduced forces, of course. There were just, I think, seven players in total. And we distanced ourselves. The audience was very distant, and it was filmed, so some of it will be streamed at some point. And then tomorrow I start rehearsals with a different orchestra, with Aurora, and we're doing a prom on the 10th of September, and we're performing Beethoven's 7th Symphony from the Royal Albert Hall. So that will be very, very distanced. It'll be the first time I've done that, but that's a full-size orchestra. I had heard that it was the largest orchestra that will be used at the proms, or up to that point it'll be the largest number of players on one stage at one time. And we've got a couple of run-ins. For instance, we're playing the Beethoven Monday twice, outdoors outside King's Cross Station on Monday. I think there's a performance at, I'm not sure the times, it's around about 6 and around about 8 or something like that.
Monday, this won't go out straight away. Let me just check what the date will be on Monday.
Yeah.
The 7th of September.
7th of September.
This may be in the past by the time this comes out, sadly, but hopefully.
Oh, okay.
And hopefully people will see it anyway. It's just, I don't know, this is so exciting for me to hear that there are some orchestral performances being prepared. And well, I know that they started in Europe. In mainland Europe before they did in the UK, I think, because the lockdown situation was better there sooner. What's it been like then preparing for it? You know, has there been a lot of, I don't know, guidelines, health and safety?
We're bombarded by emails with guidelines as to procedures. You know, wherever we go, the bars are going to be closed. There'll be no, we'll be required to bring our own food and drink. In one thing I'm doing, in 2 or 3 weeks' time, required to bring my own music stand as well. it's a brave new world, and we're all figuring it out as we go along. I'm sure that within a few weeks it will have calmed down, and we'll know what works and what doesn't. But for the main issues, really come down to transport. To what extent is one prepared to travel on the underground or buses, this kind of thing? Or I'll be driving as much as I can, which I loathe doing. Our parking in London is really not my idea of fun, but I'll be doing that for a while until I'm confident that getting on public transport is completely safe. I've got young children, and I just don't want to increase any form of risk at all. At the same time, the people have been worried about brass instruments and wind instruments and how, you know, blowing affects the spread of the germs. And there are some very interesting clips on YouTube. There's a particularly good one at the moment. It's called "You Can't Blow Out a Candle with a Trombone."
And that is excellent.
It's this trombonist playing a bit of Ravel's Bolero. And he's trying his absolute damnedest to blow out a candle with a trombone. It can't be done.
Absolutely. I think it's been a real shame that, you know, obviously I'm all for safety, but kind of singing and wind and brass instruments really have kind of taken a bit of a hit with the perception that they would be more dangerous. So I'm glad that the research has been done now to show that they aren't.
Yeah, for the listener, I would say that one of the old tests for the bel canto singers, you know, when the opera singer holds the top note for half an hour and doesn't waver, one of the tests was you put a candle in front of your mouth and the flame's not allowed to flicker whilst you're singing that top note. It's all to do with the efficiency of the vibration of the vocal cords if you're singing, and as if you're a brass instrument, with the vibration of the lips. You're creating an efficient vibration, and that doesn't involve the movement of air. The air is moved in order to make those things vibrate, but that can be done efficiently. So there's much, much, much less air used in playing generally than there is in speaking, for instance.
Yeah.
If you go to the theatre and watch an actor from a distance or from side on, you'll see particles as they spit out all the consonants. Again, you're in a theatre, so the distances negate any danger there, as far as I'm concerned. But it's important to bear in mind safety is one thing and science is another thing, and put the two together, if they make sense, that's great. But you can't invent science on the grounds of safety.
Well,
does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. And I think that safety is essential, but then, you know, yeah, as I say, if things are actually safe, then not doing them really, you know, just causes people to be, you know, not doing things that they love doing and need to do for work or for employment or for all the other reasons why we sing and play instruments. And is there any testing involved in working with an orchestra? Because I did hear about the first orchestras that went back to working together in Germany were being rigorously tested, I think.
I understand that some orchestras are, some of the symphony orchestras, some of the members are being, or all of the members are being tested weekly anyway.
Yeah.
Certainly for this project I'm starting tomorrow, we'll all be tested at the beginning of the project, but the results won't come back for a few hours or a day or so. And of course, if anyone ever shows up with a temperature or anything, we're straight back home.
Yeah, it's so difficult, isn't it? I mean, my son went back to nursery last month, after obviously months off, and it was a new nursery as well because we moved house, and immediately came down with what was fortunately a cold, so not the same symptoms, so we were quite clear. But you know, it was like there were, I'd forgotten, you know, the instant illnesses that children get as soon as they encounter a new setting.
Yeah.
And I just think of all of the, I don't know what will happen, this will go out too late, for that we'll know by the time this goes out whether this has happened, but surely the schools are reopening this week.
Well, that's both of mine went
and get ill and all be off again.
Yeah, and both of mine went back to school yesterday for the first time, and we'll have to see where it goes.
Yeah, it's really great to hear about the sort of way it is going back to. I kind of want to ask something about what it's been like to actually play in these things.
Before we go on to that, I could talk about. The Academy of Smart in the Fields have been working out how to get back, you know, how to re-establish some sort of professional life. And I've been on the artistic committee for that. And we've been working very hard at creating programs for the next series of concerts. So essentially we have 8 concerts lined up between now and Christmas at St. Martin in the Fields itself. Obviously to restricted audiences and with distancing within the players, but the fact of having a maximum number in an audience, which is actually quite small, means that we're pretty confident we're going to fill the hall up to the number we're allowed, which has meant we've been very able to be very ambitious and with our programming. So the 8 concerts coming up, several of them will contain material that you would never see the Academy performing, because it's some of it's contemporary, some of it's very little known. It's not the normal sort of commercial music that we would, you know, the commercial classic, the great Beethovens, the great Mozarts, which we normally spend our lives doing. We were able to go slightly off-piste and have a bit more fun in some ways. We've constructed a series that's hopefully relevant to our times. We're starting off with a 4A Requiem, partly in my brain's just gone dead. In memory of Martin Loveday, he was a member of the cello section of the Academy. He was ill, but he succumbed to the virus, and so partly in his memory and partly just as a reflection of the suffering that's gone on generally. So we're starting off with that.
The 4A Requiem is already moving enough without it.
I know that chokes me up every time.
Music anyone's in a while.
Yeah, and those concerts, of course, will be streamed and recorded for. So all orchestras now are aiming to build up their online content and their media content. And I think lots of things will change as a result of this. I think we're going to find ourselves marketing ourselves not only as live concert performances and expecting most of our income to be generated from ticket sales. I think the whole online experience could change a lot of that. It's going to require a lot of remodeling, because the current system for payment of artists through streaming is geared only for the super, super famous. I'll say right now, I've in my entire professional life since streaming was introduced in any shape or form, I've had the round figure of zero from royalties. Absolutely zilch. And by I know for a fact, loads of my things. I had an email from Spotify yesterday saying I've been viewed 2,000 times last month. Well, I'm still expecting absolutely zero from it. So I think the remuneration system has to be changed. If the arts are going to survive, the performing arts, and that's not just music, but the theatre, then there has to be some way in which the people that create that art, or who perform that art, are recompensed in such a way as it's feasible for them to live. You've got to be
It
able to
has to be at least.
support a family is got to be the minimum that you should be able to do out of what you can earn.
I couldn't agree
And
more. I read a blog post title this morning. I haven't read the post yet, but that said that 64% of musicians were considering leaving the industry. And as much as there has been a pandemic, and that's a fact, I do think that goes to show something about how livable an industry it is, really.
well, the pandemic has merely highlighted what was already a struggling, as I've already pointed out, streaming, which how many people on this planet have not ever streamed anything? You know, certainly in the Western world, most people are plugged into some form of device a lot of the time, and people are listening to
Absolutely.
films. You know, streaming is where it's at a lot of the time. Downloads, anything of that sort. And to expect the people that produce that work not to be paid is outrageous. It's completely wrong. It shouldn't be that way.
I think it's a shift that absolutely must happen, and this is the focus of a campaign by the Musicians Union, which came out not long after
Yeah.
lockdown started, was to fix streaming. I was having a conversation about this with somebody else the other day who said that streaming originated as a solution to a problem of piracy, and
Yeah.
essentially it responds to the fact that this is how people consume things now, isn't it? With sort of Netflix and Amazon, and you
Yeah.
know, people consume their TV and their music and so on a subscription on-demand basis, and that's
Yeah.
why it exists. But then it's not, I mean, I have no idea what the models are for the TV versions of those things, but the music versions aren't set up so that the people who've made the work get the money for it.
What I will
So.
say is there's one organization called PPL, and they collect monies for radio broadcasts. So if anything that I'm on gets played on the radio, then PPL do actually collect some monies from that. And so that's been a very, very effective organization. And whilst I've spent most of my life on the concert platform, I've not done an enormous amount of recording. It still generates a certain amount of income. And if you can do it for radio broadcasts, you can very definitely do it for anything which is computerized and has a digital signal which is 100% traceable.
Of course, because it's all analysed to the max
Yeah.
anyway, so definitely the information definitely exists,
Yeah.
for sure. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think that streaming and reacting to the way people consume music and the impact that that has on artists is absolutely critical to the future of the
Yeah.
industry, really. And same with audiences. I mean, this kind of comes full circle into what you were saying, that our audiences are going to be partly in person and partly online now, whereas before, apart from some organisations that were already doing digital a lot, then usually quite large ones with large budgets and so on. That's been a huge shift that's happened, is that many organisations now are going to have a digital element to reaching their audiences because they're not going to be able to have them in concert halls. And this again means that we have to look at how our audiences are consuming what we're offering, in the same way that the streaming does.
Yeah.
So, you know, the people who are going to come, and you know, I think you're right. I think, and it's interesting to hear the link made. And I find it encouraging actually to hear the link made between social distancing and artistic license, because it's actually quite freeing, isn't it, to know that you only need so many people to come. And hear something rather than hundreds and hundreds for some organisations anyway, because I know that worrying about what audiences will think about the music that's programmed is a really limiting thing for a lot of programmers.
Well, you can't expect the denizens of some little town somewhere to have enough audience members who desperately want to listen to Xenarchists or who desperately want to listen to some, you know, modern but unheard of composer. You know, when your catchment area has several thousand people, you might have 10 or so that might really want to listen to that sort of music. But as a planet, it's quite possible that several thousand people could be interested in listening to some very obscure piece of highly intellectual music. And that's something that it'd be wonderful to be able to tap into. You know, you have people that want to listen all over the world, people that are fascinated. But if something is eclectic, if something is a minority interest or intellectually something which is so complex that it requires a huge level of education to get into, then the fact that our audience is spread out all over the world is much less of a problem. And so I think there are huge opportunities out there, and I hope we do learn from all of that.
I agree, and it also presents opportunities with how we present these things as well, because a whole programme of something very intellectual and little known might be very difficult to sell, but 5 minutes of it in an internet clip to kind of allow for, you know, I'm not suggesting that's the only way to present it, but
yeah,
it can allow people to hear it who would never have otherwise heard it because they wouldn't have gone to
yeah.
consume it, you know, in a concert setting. It also offers up so many opportunities for people who struggle with going to concerts for other reasons to enjoy music. I love the ability of the internet to reach people who can't go out to concerts in the evening, you know, and go into
yeah.
London, and, you know, people who don't live near them, people who have young children, people who have disabilities, you know, for whatever reason. There's
yeah.
so many opportunities there. So I do think that's, you know, the future is bright in that sense for interesting and innovative ways of engaging with audiences. Do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we've become stuck on various very defined things. People put a CD into a CD player. That's, some people don't even understand what that is anymore. But then the rest of us think, well, you go to a concert, you pay a ticket, you pay for a ticket, you go to a concert hall and you sit down for 2 hours. Well, of course, one of the things that's turned up with distancing and the need for COVID safety is that most of the models for concerts over the next few weeks and months are going to be 2 one-hour concerts of the same program but distanced. So there'll be a 6 o'clock and an 8 o'clock, or a 6:30 and an 8:30, and the cleaners move in between and sanitize everything. So you can have two socially distanced audiences on the course of an evening, and then the orchestra, rather than give one full length concert, is now giving 2 half concerts effectively, but a satisfying length, an hour each. It'll be slightly harder work for the musician, but a worthwhile compromise. I think it might turn out to be a lasting model, because there have always been successes with audiences, you know, post work. You know, sort of, you just knock off work at 5:30, have a glass of wine, go to a concert, go home, and you're in time for supper.
Yeah. Well, the conundrum of when to eat around a concert has always been a really
yeah,
tricky one.
Yeah, absolutely. And for musicians.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, the number of musician dinners I've been to at 10 o'clock at night, I'm going, oh, God, really?
Yeah. You want to try Spain, where concerts
yeah.
sometimes start at 10:30 at night, and then you go to the restaurant after the concert's finished. That means you're not ordering before 1 in the morning.
I mean, surely if it starts at 10, you could just eat beforehand, or if that was too British.
It's quite hard to find restaurants that will open up. Restaurants tend to open at 9 o'clock in the evening in parts of Spain. It's just a different way of doing it.
You don't get that problem here in the northeast. I can tell you that.
Not in Tunbridge Wells today either.
No, it's it allows for, I don't know, it allows for flexibility and innovation, I think, to be able to think about. We're thinking about what audiences need more than perhaps we have in the
yeah.
past, because also, you know, existing audiences are something that everyone values enormously, you know, as someone who runs chamber music clubs and a community orchestra, you know, the last thing anyone wants to do is anything that our audience won't like, because they're enormously valuable and essential to the organisation. But having said that, it does limit innovation sometimes because we don't think outside the box and think to ourselves, okay, but what about the people who aren't coming? What might they like, you know?
Well, I do think this situation will throw up new ideas. I mean, the only good thing that can be said about the current state of affairs is that it's not a war. It's a pandemic, but there's not a war. We're not in danger at the moment of being shot at. But wars have always produced enormous, rapid advances in technology. And a lot of huge breakthroughs have taken place when, you know, enough resources were thrown at a problem to come up with a rapid solution. In wartime, there's an urgency about it. And right now, there is an equal and similar urgency to solving this problem. And that'll throw up solutions in all sorts of areas and maybe some unexpected ones. But hopefully, after the dent that the arts are taking right now, we'll be able to come up with at least some things that will change the perspective for everything. Yeah.
So I want to ask, what would be some ideal changes for you and your musical profession, your musical portfolio, and sort of the way your musical work. Sorry, I'm not expressing this very well. The way that your kind of career works for you in terms of what you do and when you do it and how you do it, and so on. What would be some ideal changes that might come out of the things that we might be learning about the, you know, as a result of the pandemic about the industry?
Well, on a very practical level, online teaching, as long as the quality of the equipment and the connection can be good, then there's no need to travel every single time one-to-one into a conservatoire. There's always a time when you're going to have to do that, and on a fairly regular basis, but not all of the time. You know, sometimes you need to be right up close and personal just to see the exact way a hand is being used or the exact way that some muscles are being used. But you don't need that all the time. And so that's going to cut down the carbon footprint a lot. It's going to cut down the amount of hours wasted in public transport or in a car. That's the sort of obvious one. The other thing is that I think with the first thing that's coming back in the classical music industry certainly is the recording studio. And very rapidly, the streaming services are running out of new product. Film companies have not been able to film during the lockdown. So very rapidly, people get a bit bored with seeing the same old things on whichever service they're subscribing to. And so new content is needed, which means that the recording industry is going to get a bit of a boost. And I think people are also going to be prepared for a bit of a change. And so I'm hoping that more contemporary music will be recorded and maybe listened to. I'm not talking the music that's extremely hard and extremely difficult to listen to, the more intellectual end, but I'm talking about music which is beautiful to listen to and fascinating. So the pop industry will get a boost, and I'm hoping that various aspects of the classical industry and the film industry will also get a huge boost from the desire for new content. Beyond that, it's hard to see how we can avoid going to places and playing in venues. Live music is unbeatable. And it's hard to see how that's ever going to change. And similarly with a recording studio, recording independently in different parts of the world and sticking it all together is all very nice, but it'll only take you to a certain level of quality.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. Music making at its highest level will always be... Actually, that's not quite true, because some types of recording are always made up of layers and layers of things which are added, and it doesn't matter where you are, in which studio. But performances of symphonies and... you know, chain music, this kind of thing, it's hard to envisage a time when that won't be much better with everyone in the same room at the same time.
Yeah, you have to share a space, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for answering that. Well, it's been lovely to talk about all of this. Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about? Is there anything else that you've got that you'd like to plug? Still available for online teaching?
Definitely available for online teaching. Yeah. At any level, all comers, and you'll find me fairly easily online somehow. And very happy. And right now, I have the time.
Lovely. Oh, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me. It was great to chat.
It's a great pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening today. To find out what we're up to, do join our mailing list or follow us on social media. And if you'd like to support the podcast by buying me a coffee, you can do that on buymeacoffee.com. Thank you so much. See you next time.